is down to wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Journalist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burn slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. With all that, getting get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream at that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to abitumi.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's abitumi.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn, the TuneIn radio app, to any of your devices. TuneIn is a free app. And then that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program, with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In the Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. It's Time for an Awakening radio program, with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Interesting articles you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also, check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things in the marketplace all the time. Various African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:06 here in the city of Philadelphia on this cold Sunday evening edition of Time for an Awakening. In the first hour of the program, maybe a little longer, we're going to have businessman, a hair care entrepreneur, and president of Dudley Products Incorporated, Mr. Joe Dudley, will be joining us in conversation. Interesting conversation we'll be having with Mr. Dudley around the hair care business and what we can do as a people to retrieve something that it seems as though we may have lost or lost ground. We'll talk about that with our guest this evening. And you can always join the conversation while our guest is with us by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies, everybody. Johnny is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum at 7th and R Street here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm anchored in, you know, the chill. Hey, Elliot, I did a little twist out there yesterday. Y'all could have seen old brother man. He thought he was going down.
Oh, on that ice, man. Yeah. I'm telling you that.
I didn't fall. I was, you know, but my leg went this way, my hip went that way. I twirled around. I felt a little ting, and I said, "Uh-oh, brother man, gonna be out." And I walked, and I was just looking for it. It didn't come, so I'm thankful for that. But you couldn't tell. You couldn't tell. I'm like, what was that? You know, I mean, you thought you was walking on the ground, but it was so thin and so slick. And I ain't a skater.
Yeah.
I might skate, but I'm not a skater.
Supposed to be another one coming tomorrow. That's what they say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. Richard, it ought to be an interesting program this evening.
I'm looking forward to it.
It kind of builds on some of the things that we've been talking about in the past and definitely things that we're going to be talking about moving forward. And it ought to be an interesting conversation with the businessman, hair care entrepreneur, and president of Dudley Products Incorporated, Mr. Joe Dudley, is scheduled to join us, and he might be already on the line. Yeah, Richard, you know, historically, since we've been in this country, barbering and morticians have been the staple businesses, beside the tradesmen that we brought here. Barbering and morticians have been the staple business among a lot of our folks here since we've been here. A lot of the men that had become free, that wasn't in chattel enslavement, was able to purchase their freedom, and a lot of them had been barbers and beauticians. It's a business that even now, if you look in the majority of these cities, and even small towns and rural areas, the staple business there that blacks still control is the barbering. And you can see now that we're kind of losing the mortician business. Other folks have been taking it over, but we still had somewhat of a hold on the barber business. But even since I've been involved in owning my own business for over 20 years, I've seen the reduction of the supply of products that are black owned, that are black distributed, but we still have some been out there doing this work and keeping the flame alive. We want to bring on our guest to talk about the business itself. We're going to mix into the conversation about the free trade agreement that the continent has started up and how we can possibly take advantage of doing business outside the borders of the United States, which he has done. He has built since institutions along with a product line and distribution and retail. He's built institutions, Richard, with barber colleges in several cities and outside of the country. And let's get on our guest. I think that he might be with us on one of these lines. Let's go here to Winston-Salem. Mr. Dudley, is this you?
Yes, I'm on.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. Can you hear me?
Yes, but it's a little echo. You might have something up in the background that's kind of kicking back your voice.
Okay. It's still kicking back?
No, I think you've handled it now.
All right. How
are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and I'm glad to have you on the program with myself and Brother Richard.
How you doing, sir? Thank you. Thank you for coming on. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
I'm happy to be on.
Mr. Dudley, before we talk about the business of our products and the manufacturing and retail and distribution of our products, let's talk about you somewhat. Born in North Carolina.
Yes.
To a large family, a family of 11 children, and you were the fifth.
You absolutely got it right.
Now, let's talk about you coming up briefly. When you were going to school in North Carolina, you had a speech impediment, and they labeled you as mentally retarded.
You're right.
But you were able to fight through that impediment because you weren't mentally retarded and become a successful black businessman, period. But talk about your travels. How did you, because, you know, I read some of the things and read a portion of the book. Let's briefly talk about how you got involved in the hair care business. Let me ask you, was your mother and father involved in hair care or things of that nature? Was your father a barber? Was your mother a beautician?
My father was a farmer.
Okay.
My mama took care of the 11 kids she had. So she was a farmer's wife and took care of the kids.
Okay. Now when you finally went off to school, you went to North Carolina A&T, and once you graduated,
right,
you got involved in selling products for Fuller Brush. I remember when I was a little kid, that was kind of popular, you know, Richard, and I know you remember about the Fuller Brush man and stuff like that going around selling products.
Right.
Yeah, so you got involved with them, and being that you took up business administration in college, your business knowledge really started taking off with the company. But when they started, go ahead.
Let me back up. There's two companies. One was full of product. That's the company I'm associated with.
Okay.
Full of Brush was a white company.
Oh, so wait a minute. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Finish
so
it.
That was a white company. And I started working with them. Both of them full of men had was the company was named after them, and they had some real big challenges because both of them went to court to claim their name Fuller, and so they agreed to coexist. So Fuller Brush probably was about 15 years older than Fuller Product.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of people got that mixed up.
Okay.
But it was two strong companies, black and white.
Okay, so I got it. You crossed up. So Fuller, the company you work for, was black owned.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for clearing that up, sir. Okay. So
now
when they started to kind of fail, you decided, you and your wife at the time, decided to start developing products at home.
No, we started developing products. Well, Mr. Fuller helped us all the way through anyhow.
Okay.
But he told us how to do this thing, and we did it. And then eventually we bought Fuller products. So that was a beginning for us. I had been in Fuller products, selling Fuller products. Well, I did it all my life, but selling the product, I had been doing that about 8-9 years.
Okay.
But we worked together. Mr. Fuller and I worked together, and he sold me the company, and I just kept on doing the same thing he was doing and making it grow.
Now, And basically that was the genesis of the product line and Dudley Products. Now tell me, once you was kind of forced out of doing the products at home and you was able to get a location, that was the start of things. Now, was the beauty school a start and you had the products there, or did you start maybe retailing the beauty products and that started the idea of the school?
I'll tell you how the school started.
Mm-hmm.
we were selling. We had a large group of salespeople. And Mr. Fuller needed a president. He needed a manager for the operation. And he had seen what I had done and was doing. And he said he wanted me to come to Chicago to become the president of Fuller Product, which I did, and president of a couple of other companies that he had. And I was not, we're not forced out. I just kept helping him bring the company where we wanted it to be.
Okay. Now, let's talk now. Let's kind of jump a little bit, because you established institutions, the barber and beauty colleges. Mm-hmm. How many cities is it presently in?
I don't exactly know. My daughter runs the operation, but we was in most all the states in the United States, and we now operate in 14, 15 countries.
Okay. Now,
yeah.
Now, it's a couple of areas I want to travel down, but first,
all right.
But first, let's talk about, because in the 1990s, I'll put it that way, you started a institution, a barber college, a barber and beauty college in Zimbabwe, and then also in Brazil. Yeah. But let's talk about Zimbabwe first, because you not only established an institution there, you were friends with President Mugabe. Talk about the friendship, how that developed, and then how you managed to get a barber and beauty institution started there in Zimbabwe.
Well, what I did, President, my governor of the state of North Carolina took me to South Africa and then went to Zimbabwe. And when I was in Zimbabwe, a young lady came to me, and I had sent her some of my products and some of my books, style books. And she said to me, "Will you help me? We need your help. I don't want your money. I want you to teach us how we can do hair and understand this business better than we do." So I said, well, I was on my way then to another country, and I said, when I come back, we'll talk. And so that impressed me, because here this young lady was interested in being helped, but not for the money. So I said, okay. I went to Brazil, and then I met a gentleman. He was my international person. Well, he was an international person. And he said, I want you to go over Brazil. I did. And so that's really how I got there. I liked this young lady, the way she was speaking about how we could help her. So that was a start.
Now, go ahead, Richard. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mr. Doug.
Yeah. And then. I got what introduced me to the president of Zimbabwe, and we talked, and he said, I invited him to North Carolina where my factory was.
I had a moment on my journey that...
I'm sorry, go ahead. You said you...
Yeah, so that's...
Mm-hmm.
That's how I got to meet President McGarry.
Oh, he came over, came to North Carolina and saw the factory and everything?
Oh, yeah, he came there, North Carolina, and stayed three or four days, I think. And so that went real good. And then I went back over, and then he came here a couple of times.
Now, in the interim, you said that you went to Brazil and started an institution there.
Yes.
Now, let's go back, because we see that the United States had established sanctions against Zimbabwe. You're there already with an institution. What happened? Let our listening audience know, because some of our listening audience don't get a chance to hear these stories, because a lot of the folks that we have set up as our watchdogs, a la politicians, they don't tell us these stories about the interference of the U.S. government in blocking international business by black companies on a large scale. Just tell us, kind of give us a little synopsis of what happened to stop that relationship. Wait a minute. Hold it.
His mic is blocked.
Wait a minute. Say that again, Mr. Dudley. I didn't catch that. I know you heard my question. Go ahead.
What did they do to stop? There's a few people. There's some people that try to stop the people. We were blessed to. We took 100-some people, I don't know the exact number, but close to that. We had sent people over to Africa and other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And sent them over, and people look at the hair and how we done the hair. And we were top black company, the top that was in Africa, and we did a good job working with them with the hair. So they wanted it. So it wasn't a lot of block. They wanted to learn from us. And that's why. So we didn't have as many challenges. Now, we hear some of the challenges. They will stop us at, this is in Brazil. I'm from Brazil to Africa, but
mm-hmm. Go ahead.
They stopped us at shipping. And that's when we got trouble. They would let our product sit in the shore, and sometimes it would rot. So that was one of the challenges that we were faced with. But we kept working it. We were serious about getting over there, because people would tell us the big story, the problems they had. And one of them problems they had, that we had, that they would just hold up some of our product so we couldn't get it. And some other things that I can't think of right now that stopped us. But we were pretty determined. So, you know, it's hard to fight somebody that's really determined.
Okay.
And that was us.
So they would, the products and all that you would ship internationally, they would let them sit at the warehouses on the shores or whatever, and some of them would rot, you said.
Yeah. They let tanks and loads of products and just sit there and create a problem.
Okay.
So.
Now, being that you've been involved with international business for a while, is it, because, you know, myself and Brother Richard was talking about this the other week, is there any black shipping lines that you know of that's out there operating?
Not that I know.
Okay.
I'm sure they might be, but I just don't know about them.
Richard, I know you want to jump in there. Go ahead.
Mr. Dougley, and I appreciate the opportunity. I want to go back, and I'm kind of interested in your experience in developing, you know, scaling up this the business over time. So I want to go back to the point of the sales force when you were working for Mr. Fuller. Was the sales force primarily a Black sales force?
We had answer to yes, but we had about a fourth, a third, some other people with another company, which we owned, which was Boyer International Company. Mr. Fuller bought that. You may, in my book, it talks about this too, but we bought out a company, and that's how we got the white involved in it. But that was a difficult project for us.
I'm curious on that. When you say difficult to explore that, you say you bought out, Mr. Fuller bought out a white company, which had a white sales force. Were they selling to black clientele? Is that what made them difficult? Or was it because of being a prior white company and now under black ownership that made it difficult?
I think that helped a lot because I think in my book, Walking My Faith, it'll tell you a lot of things about that project. Mm-hmm. But we can stay close to the Fuller product, which is fully black. We own that, but we have some whites.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm curious about looking at the business organization, since you were evolved, you and Mr. Fuller, and he brought you on as really a successor in this business enterprise, and even to you becoming an owner, which is a phenomenal in my mind. Just how the growth of that happened, the organizational process, even to go and deal with international, to an international business. So the black sales force that y'all manage, do you have any stories to share of just how was that? Because correct me if I'm wrong, today we don't have that kind of black sales force pushing products, which I assume that you had at that time in that stage. And help us with the time. What time were you when you went to, I believe you said you went to Chicago. What year around was that?
I'm trying to place what year it was. I went to work, and let me back up a little bit and share with you. I went to work with Fuller Product Company right after college. And I didn't work directly under Mr. Fuller. I worked under one of his managers of Johnson Product. It was Johnson Johnson Product Company. And I went there to work, and that was in 1957, I think.
That's okay. That's a good
And I went there, I went selling house to house. That's how all of us got started. I got started in the book. I told you that I started with $10 and selling from house to house. And we had a sales meeting every morning. Well, matter of fact, we had a sales meeting seven times a week, seven meetings a week. And he was teach us first the philosophy of how to build a business. Mm. And we picked up more than just how to sell a product. We taught people how to develop their ability to become self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, they're not people like us today. And so that was what pretty much went on. I'm doing my history information, and people that really want to know how to build a business in a black culture.
Mm, that's important.
We got that. They different than what the Caucasian people need to grow their business. We understand all that, and as we communicate more, you'll see what I'm talking about.
God, excuse me. Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I was going to be arrogant and say, if I understood you right, you're saying that not only the sales force was developed to sell products, but they were developed to be in, like, to understand the philosophy of selling products so that they could move to be independent business owners themselves at some point if they wanted to.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Most of the blacks became successful in business. I'm not just talking about the hair business. Came from my mentor, Mr. S. E. Fuller. They learned from that. I got a lot of information. Mr. Fuller, people that he trained have pretty much represented let me get it straight. Yeah.
Take your time.
I was number 52 out of the top 100 people, of his people. But he had at least the top people, they always represent the top 10 in the country. Most of them ranked 1, 2, 3 and all those companies.
So I'm interested in us understanding that our business organizations, you know, were structured. You just mentioned that black business did understand white business, but it was another element. And I'm assuming that's a cultural element, being a salesperson, dealing to a black clientele, how you have to engage in order to make those sales. And that's a part of the business philosophy. But I wanted to, and I may be wrong with that, but I wanted to ask you about Mr. Fuller's business organization, and then yours, the managers, did they have to go through a similar training to be the managers, whether they're managers of Salesforce or managers in other areas. Were they trained in the same way as the sales force? How did that work for the Black, the managers? And were they Black in the organization?
Yes. Most all of them were Black. They were trained basic the same. We all came through the door-to-door operation direct. And we trained them in this manner. Leadership, and what was leadership, we trained that. We worked with them. You know, they had to have initiative. They had to have courage. They had to have loyalty. They had to have integrity, and then they had to have wisdom, insight.
I mean, you know, Mr. Douglas, you're providing us. I mean, and this is, you know, because, you know, of that period, there were a lot of successful Black businesses that were doing direct business contact with Black clientele. So, which is like compared to now. Correct me if I'm wrong. Do you see, I mean, are you able to see, do Black businesses today have the same kind of contact with their customer base as the Black businesses that you, when you came in out of college? Does the Black businesses today have the same contact with their clientele, the people they sell to, as the business when you got out of college, as the business that you were, the businesses that you were involved with? Do Black businesses have the same customer relationship today, as you see?
I don't think so. I mean, it kept going down. I think when I came along, we had close contact with our customer base. But the thing, the big thing is the difference. These Caucasian people, business, white business, whatever we call them, they deal with the stores, they open up stores, they had those stamps I just talked to you about. But the other people had stores, and they had the corporation owned many of the stores, different stores. So it's a little different, you know, it was different. I have, and I've been thinking about how that we can build and start in a foreign country somewhere and get the beauty business going. But we can't build the business the same way the other people build. Because we don't operate with the same cash flow, the money. And this is a mistake we made. We don't have no grocery store to mount to anything. We don't have no, no, I don't think we have a many cars we have. I don't think we own, if we do, it's a small amount, any manufacturer that manufactures automobiles.
Right.
We don't have no grocery stores in most of the places. Shoe stores, many shoes. And most of us, most of all, we got to have some shoes. We got to have different clothes. But we don't manufacture it at all. America was built, Black America business was built from the healthcare business, I believe.
Okay.
From what I Okay.
Okay.
Beat us along. We don't have no beat us along mount to a lot today. There's a lot that need to be done. But we can't do it with the way we done it.
I agree. Wow. And Ellie, the only reason why I wanted to, you know, and I appreciate Mr. Dugley in that portion being able to bring it out, because that relation, you know, the building of that structure, you heard the elements, especially at the management level, that people were trained to do in doing the business. Mr. Dugley, I have some reasons why, but I think because we don't have direct contact, white businesses can advertise and touch people and then bring them to our store, their stores. That costs money. That costs a lot of money to do that. Black businesses don't have that kind of capital infusion to influence its market. But when y'all at the point y'all were with that sales force, that those men and women, they were the ones who were creating the relationships. I think that's another difference. Even when it gets down to a neighborhood store, because we have in the urban areas, we have corner stores, but we don't own them. And we don't have the same kind of, the ones who own them still don't, may not have the same kind of relationship. And I don't want to go, but Elliot, one thing that he explained that I appreciate, because you bring up about direct action. Well, that structure is a direct action structure, right? Whether mm-hmm. you do it by business or political, you got people on the ground. They have to have a certain kind of philosophy. They have to have a certain kind of rapport with their customer base. That's what I appreciate, Mr. Dugley, helping us see that.
And integrity and ethics. You heard mm-hmm. him mention those things also. Mm-hmm. It was Mr. Dugley.
Yeah, let me.
Go ahead.
Yes.
No, go ahead.
No, I was thinking of, I have trained 30,000 hairdressers around the world. And I don't think, I mean, I've got some that became millionaire hairdresser. And been with me for 25, 30 years. Done nothing else. Don't have a husband to take care, to help out. But you would think there would be a lot of them coming, want to find out, how did I do that?
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, it takes us a long time to go through some of the things that would really help.
But this is helpful. This is definitely, helpful in you, because you are living witness of a major business moment in Black America. I mean, we don't see that, as you said, which is the next level, kind of out of the structure, because you came through that process, and Mr. Fuller seeing you as a leader and brought you to Chicago, if I understood that right. He's seen the leadership qualities that you had in coming through that process and helping the business grow. That's to me, it's powerful and important. And I don't know, maybe Elliot, maybe you know, where we have a lot of examples of that that we can look at and I'm gonna call it have testimonies of, and then saying you're trained 30,000 people. That's a great accomplishment for as a Black business person.
And plus, Richard, I just want to add this. To be doing international business on that scale, to have plants where you're producing the products, you're mm-hmm. shipping the products, and still have a grasp and a knowledge and a relationship with grassroots people in your community. I don't think it's a business in this country that still has that relationship, if you understand what I'm saying, Richard.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's why I wanted to have Mr. Dudley on to talk about, because he's doing business on an international level. He's in other countries, the diaspora countries. He's on the continent where our people are. And he mentioned about the young lady came to him and said, can you train us? And then the president of the country come over here and seen the plant and you know, offered him space over there in the country to do this. Let me ask this in the time we have left, Mr. Dudley. What happened with the school in Zimbabwe? I know it was difficulty getting the products there, but what is the school still in existence? What has happened with the school in Zimbabwe?
Well, I think some parts of it is running today. I told them I would work with them for about 4 or 5 years, which I did. It was challenging.
Okay.
And we trained some people that been in England. They have almost schools in some other parts of the world. We had them to come over here and go to our school too, and stay here with us for a while until they got their certificate for a little better than a year, and then came into our school that was here. I would love to see somebody that was serious about the school and would work hard. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to help them. We went to Africa to help. Most of the people went to Africa to make money. Mm. That was not what our goal. I sent 2 people. Oh, I've sent 100 people over there all together. But I just had one young lady just coming back from over there, from Zimbabwe. And so we just sent out an hour expense, and we made no money in Africa. We would love to have, but we didn't. So, now where are you located now?
Well, I'm in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, okay. Yeah, because I wanted one of my people sent a book over there, did they?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I do have it.
Oh, and, yeah. I wish you would get a chance to read it, and I'll get, we'll find a way to get you a book. How many do you need? 2 or 3?
I like to have one.
Yeah, yes. I can give one away to one of the listeners that call, and then to Richard. Before
Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay.
Mr. Dudley, before I let you go, we see that, now, you know, it's kind of ironic that Mr. Fuller's main office was in Chicago, because it seems as though a lot of the home offices for a lot of large black businesses during that period was in Chicago, Johnson Products and others. Talk about what has happened to, now, I'm not talking about you, because you have institutions that you've built internationally. You have product lines. You have the manufacturing. You don't own the shipping right now, but you got just about 9 out of the 10 things already dealt with, and plus you pass stuff down to your children. Talk about the challenges and what has happened. We see over the now since I've been in, I've owned my business 24 years, and since I've been in, I've seen Asians almost take over the market with products, distributing them to black barbershops and beauty salons. How did this happen? What happened in that relationship there that caused our people to start looking towards other people to provide products for their hair, for our hair? What has happened in your estimation?
Well, what has happened? We have never done any real growth. What we've done as a group of people, let me back up. I think the insurance people were doing very well at one time. That when white would not sell, let insure black people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, at one time, black people did all the barbering. They cut everybody's hair.
Yes, white and black, yes.
Yeah. But when white folks saw the money in it, they jumped in. Then the funeral home, I think we talked about that. The funeral home, they weren't burying no black folk. But now, when they started burying them, then they put the barbershop, I mean the funeral home out of business. But here what I'd like to see.
Mm-hmm.
And all the same thing happened all around and whatever business that we have. We're going to have to start a trend, some young people.
Mm.
Just before they get in college, right after college, and teach them about the economics of our people.
Wow.
We can't do that when somebody is old. I'm talking about old folks. I'm talking about myself, 80-something years old. I ain't like I'm going to do. I said to people that we get a certain age, all we can do is just prepare for the grave. So, and happen to other people, the young people. We're not going to get, you know, it's like this. We jump 3 feet and fall back 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have enough knowledge of what's happening to our people. What's the percentage of how we've grown since I've been in the business for 50-some years? We have fallen back in economics in the whole country. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. I just didn't know where y'all wanted to go to be able to talk.
No, you listen.
You did more than helpful.
Yeah, matter exactly.
Hey, Elliot, I don't mean to be presumptuous, but if Mr. Dugley can come back at some time, we can continue to go. Because I think we need to, you supply that history, and this is a forum where we can be able to hear it. But, I mean, you're providing the history of the structure we had. And I like that what you said. We jump 4 feet and fall back 5.
Mm.
You know, And the point of, we got to get to the young people to know the history of how these businesses work. But more importantly, how y'all develop a sales force, a management force, and a supply line. That's we don't really have that kind of big picture of Black businesses doing that. They give us pictures of individuals, but they don't give us pictures of how those businesses do that. We don't see that. So I appreciate what you whatever you share, Mr. Dudley, is really important and powerful.
Mr. Dudley, I want to thank you for, go ahead.
Let me just say this.
Mm-hmm.
I can take you all the way back from the development of my company from 1967. I started with $10. And every year I got in a program I got on 1995. I got Mr. Fuller picture and my picture and my manager picture. Get on page, I'm in the book, Dudley, A Vision Journey of Dudley. Digital. But I think you would enjoy, this is one you need to see. I used to give these books to people, but they wouldn't even read it. So now I don't give them out. I charge them.
That's right. Charges, because we don't know value when we see it.
Mr. Dudley, what we gonna do? Because like I said before, I've started reading the book. I haven't finished. And Richard, he's a bibliophile, so he loves to read. So once we complete the book, we're gonna have you back on and go into this a little more in depth. Listen, the time that you spent, you've uncovered some gems for us and for the listening audience. But we're gonna get you back on, and we're gonna crack this nut a little bit further.
Oh, okay. I appreciate talking to you all. It's last that, I don't want to take this information to the grave. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so listen, you didn't.
And we don't want you to either.
You have passed the knowledge on. You said you've trained over 30,000 other people. Your children is standing in your position now to help push things further. That's what it's all about. And plus, you're teaching them a business ethic. Just like you said, Richard, he said, we can't do business like these other folks.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Dudley, I want to thank you for being with us. Thank Ms. Ella for arranging things, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we will. I should probably talk to some of you and see how many books you and the books that she think you want. And we will do that. I appreciate talking to y'all. And we will. And Lance and Ella.
All right. Talk to you soon. Have a good evening.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a brief break, Richard, and when we come back, we're going to have another guest joining us. He wrote a provocative letter that he wants to share with the listening audience. Brother Wes Johnson from down there in New Orleans, activist and radio entrepreneur, talk show host. He does a lot of things, and the brother is a good brother. He's been in this fight a long time, and he'll be with us to share with the listening audience a portion that he wrote, and I know he's going to talk about it on his program. But he'll be with us to do a little sharing. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. Time for An Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. Amen. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
A The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you've called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we're black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up, and that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back. The time for an awakening is 8:19 in the city of Philadelphia. I want to thank our guest that was on for the first portion of our program, a businessman and executor of Dudley Products, Mr. Joseph Dudley, was with us. Brother Richard. I think of the, Richard, you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Before we transition over, let me say something. You know, Mr. Dudley on with us. This man has, he talked about the mentor that helped him in business, mm-hmm. eventually buying the business, creating a multi-million-dollar business. The school is in so many states. I think he said it's in all the states.
No,
I think
it was in all the states, yeah.
Doing international business. But he said something that rings, a lot of things he said ring just rung in my mind. But he said something, Richard, and this is a man, I mean, you see all these people now that's got a little money, just like Minister Farrakhan says in one of these clips. But he said that he went to the continent because he wanted to help.
Yeah.
Not because he wanted to make money.
Right.
We got to develop a different mindset in approaching this. You know, it's not about, if we do what we're supposed to do, the money will come. It shouldn't be about, you heard what he said about the principles and selling, mm-hmm. black people selling to one another is different than European. He didn't say European, he said Caucasian. He said it's different. This is a man that has made, if people are fascinated with it, made millions of dollars. He said it's different, Richard. You heard him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why it was so important for us to understand the organizational structure, because it's that. And he also said when Mr. Fuller bought the white company, the sales company, the challenge that those white salesmen had in dealing with, you know, the clientele. and he was diplomatic, and I respect that. Yeah, maybe I might have misread it. You correct me if I'm wrong. But he was, they had a little challenge. You know, it might have been about the ownership, but it's also, you know, the relationship. And we just, you know, I think that, you know, and yes, each generation has to evolve its skills to fit the time when we're talking about business. But when you leave your core market, people say black people went to white market. No, black businesses also didn't continue to create the marketing infrastructure when they left it. Because if you track that all the way up to, I mean, whether it be on the political side or the business side, it was the sales force. Because it costs money to go into advertising. Hmm. I mean, they spend millions of dollars. Now, we talk about how they brainwash us to buy they use, get their product, but just to get to an advertising firm, you got to have that money on the side. It's got to be a part of your business, you know? And then white folks don't buy your product, which some of us call unequal exchange. we buy their product,
mm-hmm.
right? So we got, you know, they sell to their market and they have us, but we buy their products, but they don't come and buy ours. That's unequal exchange. That's a trade imbalance. That has impact on the business bottom line. And that, you know, so, it, you know, and that's culturally controlled. That's politically controlled. I'm glad, you know, and like you said, they taught those people who were direct, not just how to do the sales, but how to be businessmen. So that, you know, we talk about Uber now. They were training Uber, and I was looking in that book, the history of black business in America, and Ms. Walker, the Professor Walker, she mentions, which I didn't know until just now, that Johnson got trained. He worked for Fuller for 10 years.
He did. Wow.
Let me see if I got how. Make sure I got the right. I was just looking at it. Oh yeah, the most successful black hair care manufacturer since the four pioneers in the early 20th century was George H. Johnson, who founded Johnson Products in 1954 after having worked 10 years for Fuller Products.
Wow.
So not only did Dudley branch off, as he said, Johnson branch off. And yeah, I mean, you see what I'm saying? Like, where do you see this here, this kind of process that is able to create multiple business enterprise, and that's in one industry.
I know it.
And then, you know, like, and the other interesting thing, and I get excited about this because we're trying to solve the problem, which, and history does help us, right, in solving the problem. And if I could just do this one paragraph before we go to, in relationship to this, because I've seen some young PhD students, they looked at the hair at Temple. They did their a paper on the transition of the hair care industry and moving, because, you know, those who went through the Jerry Curl, how the white companies got involved. But Professor Walker has, before this turn of events, however, Gardner, and the turn Edward Gardner from Soft Sheen, had considered the sale of Soft Sheen, the Jerry Curl, looked without of out by the mid-1980s. And the profits were in decline, ranked 11th in the Black Enterprise Top 100 for 1994, with sales of $97.2 million. Soft Sheen in 1995 ranked 15th, and sales of $92.8 million. Gardner also faced competition from four other BE 100 companies, Lester Products, Proline, Boner Brothers, and Dudley Products, who was total in 1995 were $145.6 million. Along with Soft Sheen, their combined sales was $243.6 million. Here's the twist and how white businesses, and he brought up about the thing of the funeral homes. However, were dwarfed by one of the giants in the industry. In the 1990s, Chicago-based Helline Curtis Industries had sales of $893 million. That's a white company.
Mm-hmm.
In the post-Civil War right period, white companies with aggressive marketing campaigns, especially Alberta Calvier, Revlon, and Helline Curtis, had gained not only a large market share of Black hair care products, but also retained their edge in the Black cosmetic and skincare industry. Doubtless, they are confident that they can maintain control over these industries, yet it is extremely unlikely that after almost a century of participation in the health and beauty aid industry, African-American firms were going to yield to their assault. They came after them. You hear me? I don't know what we think, and yes, it's a lot of blame to go around, but business is warfare. This is not no, you know, this is, and this is America. These guys take down countries for the business. So if we, as he said, if we don't orientate these, not when they get to college, because you see now what they're doing, right? Isn't all this philanthropic money going to HBCUs? White billionaire money going to HBCUs? Do you think they're doing it just out of the good graces of their heart?
No. No. Again, playing chess and playing checkers is the difference.
At 80, who's seen this, saying, you got to get them before they get to college. Not to just tell them to be how to do financial management or anything like that. How Black businesses work. Because there is that cultural component to Black business, and is that personal integrity. You hear what he said? The managers, they had to understand leadership.
It was fascinating.
Maybe I'm wrong.
No, you're right. It was fascinating, the conversation that we had with him. And hopefully, he said, listen, he sent me that book after a couple of days. He'll send the book.
And the arrogance of I'm sorry, Elliot. He said, I was giving the books away and the Negroes wasn't reading it. Did I hear that wrong?
No, you didn't hear it wrong.
He said, like, look, I got to charge y'all. I'm willing to help, but it's at some point helping you. I mean, and that has to be a generation. But if they put something up, I don't go no further. Because it's hard to not, you know, I don't want to criticize us, because these white folks, they use that marketing thing. That ain't no lightweight joke. And you know, in the sense of orientating what you should be looking at, what you think, you know, and Dr. Fox says that in Addicted to White, you know, making sure that your mind understands that white values is more successful. So they're not going to listen to Mr. Dudley and the success that he had. And even on the continent, he said, we sent people there, but here again, trade, right?
Yeah.
Because they came here.
Yeah, exactly. He said they came here and stayed and went through training.
That's trade.
Wow.
That's how you build trade relationship, international trade relationship, in this thing they call human capital. To service what? A client. Black people, yes, we did do white hair, but that's primarily Africans dealing with Africans, cultural matrix of the one thing that we have in common, among others, is our hair. What do we have to trade? We have, and what he said, the style. There she wanted to learn the style that he was training them for, to train other Africans to do hair in that style. So Black folks here on the continent, in Brazil, in Africa, they're wearing the same hairstyle, but they're trading based on that. And the government is saying, no, y'all ain't gonna do, y'all ain't getting into us like that. We leave y'all stuff on the dock.
I know it.
We leave your stuff on the dock. And I think that was the Brazilian government, not the African government. But I'll stop. I mean, I get it. That's what we need, that intergenerational exchange of information in order to really, like Baba Clark says, you know, about history. Because that that's history, right, that he's sharing. You ain't getting that, you know, no white television program in no white movie, you know, production company with black faces in it. You ain't getting that understanding. Yeah, stop me, Elliot, before I...
We'll get him back on. I want to get him back on because, you know, spend a little more time with us.
Right.
You know, we're going to...
Everybody understood, too.
We're going to shift gears a little bit and add to the conversation one of our brothers in the struggle and an elder in the struggle. He's a veteran, been out here a long time. Activist, organizer, talk show host down here in New Orleans of Our Story. You know, he sent me a piece that he wrote, and I want him to come on here to share it with the listening audience because, you know, listen, I run a business and the public comes in, and 99.9% of the people that come in look like me and you, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
And they had conversation about this dog and pony show that we just saw. But they weren't looking at it in the perspective that they needed to. They was just looking at it on the surface. Oh, I want to see him in jail. I want to see him in handcuffs. But, you know, Brother West sent me something that he wrote, and I know he's going to put it out to his audience down in New Orleans, get him to come on tonight and talk about it. The title of the article is America and the Black Holocaust. And let's bring Brother West Johnson on with us. Brother West, you there?
Yes, I am. And greetings, brother. Jumbo Habari to both you and Brother Richard.
How are you, sir?
How you doing now, Brother West?
I'm doing fine.
Listen, I always follow what you're doing because you're always sending me texts. You send me emails. So, you know, we keep abreast of what's going on. And I know you hear stuff that we do. But you forwarded the piece that you wrote today. And I thought it was kind of apropos to kind of share things with the listening audience. And it was entitled American, the Black Holocaust. And you talked about it in relation to what we just saw played out in the media, on the television. Talk about your perspective of what we saw, Brother West, and some of your assessments that you wrote.
Well, actually, I wrote that piece because I'm concerned that our people here in America quite possibly could end up the same way that the Jews did in Germany with the rise of Hitler. And that's because Trump reminds me so much of the history of Hitler and his rise to power. I pointed out the fact that the boxcars pull up into the ghettos of Germany and they start loading them up with Jews. The question I pose, how soon is it going to be before the boxcars start pulling up in the black neighborhoods of America for the transportation to some godforsaken camp where who knows what's going to happen? And I brought that out because of what happened over the weekend. I watched the events unfold, and what got me was the fact that there was really no question that Trump was guilty. And after Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell came out and said what he said, my first thought were they should be impeaching him for his dereliction of duty. But before that pronouncement by Senate Minority Leader McConnell, the managers of the impeachment rose on Saturday morning, and they put forth the possibility of calling witnesses because of what had happened the day before with a story breaking about people talking to Trump during the actual takeover of the Capitol. And I found it interesting that the managers put forth the possibility, the Senate took it up, voted on it, and passed to have it. What got me was the mere shock of the Speaker of the House was in shock. He really did not know what to do. Once they won the vote for the witnesses to be called, not only he asked the Senate for a quorum call to kill time so they could rally together to see what they could do. And then after the quorum call was done, then he asked for a approximately a two-hour halt to the proceedings so that they could go and find out what their next step was going to be. Now, for Democrats who was prosecuting this impeachment, to be caught off guard like that, to me, suggests that we do not have a two-party system in this country.
Mm-hmm.
We have two supposed parties, but they're actually functioning as one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they play games with the public, and they treat us like we're dumb and ignorant, and it's unfortunate, but we are. That's the bottom line. But I'm listening to this, watching this, and I'm saying that someone needs to step up and say something about what is it that we need to do as Black people to protect ourselves in this country. And where are our Black media, our Black preachers, our Black organizations, the NAACP, the Urban League, on and on and on? Where are they, and why haven't they stepped up to say or do something in our behalf? It's very obvious that the Black politicians are not representing Black people in America. They put a lot of fanfare in the game, but when it's all said and done, in 2021, we're still slaves. We're still fighting for some hope and prayer that at some point in time, we will be recognized as being a human.
Mm.
And I say a human because we weren't looked upon as humans when we were in chattel slavery, and we are not looked upon as human today in this new slavery that we have been living with since the Emancipation Proclamation, approximately 154 years. So we need to wake up, since our leadership will not wake us up. We need to wake ourselves up. We need to be the leaders that we've been hoping for, the leaders we've been looking for, by standing up and doing what's necessary in order to take our business in hand and direct our business in a direction that's going to take us to a place of security, safety, freedom, and most importantly, sovereignty, so that we can rid ourselves of the damnation that we have had to deal with for the last 154 years in this country.
Brother West, you know, some of our people are, and you know, the television is a drug because it shows and perpetuates images that they want our people to buy into. And when I say our people, the quote unquote liberal wing of this Democratic Party, and just like you said, the Republican Party and Democratic Party, they're both the same. They function as one. But the liberal wing of the Democratic Party is veiled, reaching out to black folks with veiled promises and throwing money at groups that control the minds of a percentage of black folks. And when black people see that, they perceive that as being progress. But it's a strategy. Yeah. It's a strategy by Europeans to kind of tamp down any forms of what they consider dissonance or disillusion among our people. They realize that the spirit of freedom and the spirit to be free can never be beaten out of a people. They've tried that. Even through the generations, the spirits of our ancestors that were brought here in chains, that spirit to desire freedom, to want freedom for our babies, is never going to be gotten rid of. But they always think of strategies to try to divert that, to try to reach younger generations, to steer them in a different direction. How do you see this playing out for our people now? Just looking at you as a man that has been in the struggle for a while, the use of media, and I'm talking about popular media, black media, that are controlled by white conglomerates, you're not going to see them put the real story, so to speak, out there so our people can understand it. But the thing that we have now is independent media and the use of the internet and other shows and things of that nature. Independent stuff that you do down in New Orleans with your show and in your radio program, things that we try to do to a certain extent, you know, the forum that we have. It's going to be voices like that the people will eventually hear, because if I sit and wait for, and I'll just use names of Roland Martin or Al Sharpton or somebody to say these things, they'll say certain things, but they're only going to go but so far.
Yeah, that's true. There's a big problem that we have, and that is we are plugged in to a source of energy that is not conducive for our well-being. With the independent media, there is still an uphill fight, an uphill battle.
Okay.
Because we are still trying to convert people who are strung out, who are in deep dependency on the system in the norms that the system promotes. Now, people like ourselves, people like the majority of your audience, they know, they understand what the situation is with black people. But in order to step out and try to remove yourself from that, it's more than just a notion. You have to be committed and you have to be willing to die for what you believe in. When on January the 6th, when the Trump supporters ran to the Capitol, they were caught up in the moment. They did not understand and realize that there were people within the crowd who was there to move them in certain directions. They felt everyone was just dealing with the flow. When they got into the Capitol, and when that woman got shot at the door, that put a lot on the minds of some of those that were just there caught up in the moment. That moment fractured them right then and there. And since then, the ones that are being arrested, the first thing you're saying, well, I was told to do this by the President of the United States. Had that group of people been committed to the cause, been willing to die, they would have lost the Capitol that day. This government would probably be totally shut down, and we would be experiencing a military life in America until they could sort things out. That's the problem we're facing as a people and as a community. We have people who get caught up for a moment, but then when they hear the little trinkets being thrown and cast out, when they see the plastic beads being thrown to them, they forget all about the culture of the black man, the nation of Africa, and everything that has to do with our survival is gone because their attention span is so short with us until they are not able to stand on their own two feet, make a commitment, and see that commitment through. And that's something we don't address and we don't work on as a people who are conscious about what it is that we know we need to be about the business of. We have not found a way to reprogram our own people into believing in our people.
Mm.
And that's where we need to focus on.
Wow.
Well, let me ask you this, Brother Wes. Well, it's two. At first, I wanted that quote, which I thought you put in your article that Mitch McConnell said, when you said he said it best. Donald Trump was guilty of the charges, and the reason for his acquittal was because the Senate lacked jurisdiction. You know, so and I guess he felt he had to put that out there because of what was presented. You couldn't overlook that. But as you said, even the Democrats were shocked when they were, you know, going to have to put up juries. the thing that what you raise in relationship to the strength and weakness of the communication outlet, I guess what I'm trying to get to is, I see there's a minority, a very small minority of people like ourselves that are out here. Would you say that we, knowing that this larger majority of Black folks, talking about Black folks, that we have to, just amongst ourselves, using the strength of the communication networks that we have to, if I'm reading you right, we have to be speaking more differently about what is our plan, because of the nature of what you're describing is occurring within white America, its political and its you know, cultural matrix right now. I know most of us, like, can we change the minds and hearts of Black people in general? And a thrust is trying to do that, and that is an uphill battle, and we're not Salmon. But shouldn't we be considering something that we need to be doing in order to protect ourselves because of, if I understand you right, the handwriting that's on the wall?
Yeah, exactly. And this is the problem. Outside of our circle, rarely, if ever, do we hear mention white supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
White supremacy is the reason that Donald Trump was able to do what he has done over the last 5 or 6 years. White supremacy is the reason that those people who stormed the Capitol were there,
mm-hmm,
because of white supremacy. My thing is, we have not called out those Republicans who did not vote,
mm-hmm,
to convict, and we certainly don't call out the Democrats who give us a lot of lip service, but nothing substantial. That they are all protecting white supremacy. And until we make white supremacy the number one cause and reason for the continuation of the big lie in this country, then we'll be able to have our attention span shortened and our allegiance to ourselves muted and taken away, because we have not admitted to ourselves, we have not been able to openly talk about white people and white supremacy, and that white people are protecting and promoting white supremacy daily.
Mm.
I don't care how liberal they try to tell you they are. I don't care how much they try to show you that they like Black people. The bottom line is, they love them more than they like us. So much so, they will do anything to keep white supremacy the rule of the land. That's where we are. We're not calling a spade a spade. We're not calling a cracker, and we need to do that.
You know, well, go ahead, Richard, because I think you was getting ready to mention.
The thought, you know, when you said the ones that were caught up in the moment, and you mentioned those senators that didn't vote and whatever, and I'm just reemphasizing the point that you made, because even those who were caught up in the moment, like, they didn't know this other group was about moving forward to really take over the Capitol. They obviously will still vote for those senators, which reinforces the point that you just made. To me, it seems that that's the point that you're making. They were caught up. They wasn't expecting it. But those senators, when they went home, they're going to support them, which means that they support that white supremacist action.
Yes.
That took place.
Yes. Yes. 100% correct. And we do not call, I mean, we have people on white media that are supposed to be black that talk about everything under the sun but white supremacy. They use all kinds of examples. They don't talk about the examples of white supremacy. Those of us that are conscious are in the bubble. Because as soon as we mention white supremacy in an open meeting, everything is done to try to shut us down. Because no one wants to pull the curtain back and reveal that white supremacy is the reason for everything in this country, everything in this world that white people do. And until we start talking about the fact that white supremacy came about in order to eliminate black rule, then we're fooling ourselves. We go back to slavery, and that's it. But slavery was not the ultimate cause and reason for where we are today. The ultimate cause and reason for where we are today started in Kemet. When black people were rulers, they were the rule of the day. And in order for whites to become rulers, they had to eliminate us. And not only have they done this physically, they've done it mentally as well. Most of us know nothing about Kemet. Most of us know nothing about the fact that whites were killing each other, eating each other in the mountains of Ural and Caucasus. And if it hadn't have been for black who were practicing the theology that they created, white folks would have been dead hundreds, thousands of years ago. But we saved them. We don't even remind them of the fact that we were the ones responsible for their salvation. And I'm not talking about salvation in a religious sense. I'm talking about it in a sense of survival. We must begin to educate ourselves and our people to the fact that we are the original people. We are the original rulers. But our rule is not the same as their rule. Humanity meant something under our rule. Humanity means nothing at all under European rule. And go back, let's define, let's examine, and let's preach the problem is white supremacy, and we need to change that now.
Yeah, Brother West, before, there's a couple callers here waiting, I'm going to get them on. Before I do that, you mentioned that both parties protect white supremacy.
Yes.
Let me throw out a couple of examples in relation to this, and I want to see your opinions on it. When those folks ran into the Capitol, with bats, weapons, twist ties to arrest people, they wanted to get their hands on lawmakers. That's a treasonous act, according to the laws of this country. And you would consider that insurrection, because it was the same thing that their quote-unquote leader was supposedly charged with that didn't go through. So you would think
Correct.
That the people arrested would be charged with insurrection and treason. But if you notice, the folks that have been arrested so far, and some of them have been allowed to go home, post bail, go on vacation, they've been charged overwhelmingly with illegally entering, not breaking and entering, but illegally entering the White House, which is a misdemeanor, and disorderly conduct. So in the charging itself, it shows you that it's white supremacy, that they don't really want to really put a hurting on their own brethren. Now, I want to give another example of what you consider white supremacy and get your opinion on it before I go to the calls. This black guy that they keep showing on the television that was running through the hall and throwing his stick and running away, the guard, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Now, when you're a guard on a government installation and someone tries to enter it illegally, because 6 years ago, it was a young lady that had mental problems that had her daughter in the car. And when she tried to ride through the Capitol gates, if you remember, the White House guards blew her brains out with her daughter in the car. You remember that?
Yes.
Okay. Now, especially black politicians should have been livid and up in arms in reference to that. And they basically were swept by the boards. So, you know, that's what you would do, I think, if someone illegally enters the Capitol grounds with mayhem in their minds. I'm not talking about somebody with the situation with the little baby in the car. Now, when that woman was the first through that door or whatever, and that guard shot her, if you notice, the white media don't play up about the guard being a quote-unquote hero. You don't know who he was. But they play up a black man who was running up the steps and running away because he was a hero and he protected, as you say, white supremacy. I think it's something more sinister in what they're doing when they do one thing and then... Do you understand what I'm trying to say, Brother West?
Yeah, and this is... Let me respond this way.
Go ahead.
Go back to the original blacks who were first placed on police forces in this country.
Okay.
I don't care in what city, I don't care in what state, I don't care what town, every time a black became a police officer, they were instructed that you could only enforce law on your people.
Okay.
But you call a white policeman if you have problems with a white citizen. That brother was running up those stairs because he knew if he had shot and killed any of them white folks, he would probably be going to jail and possibly to the electric chair, gas chamber, or the gallows, whichever they use. But he knew that he would be going through hell if he harmed any of them white folks. That is a conversation that we have not had as a people in our community for a very long time. But it's the reality today.
Let's grab a couple calls. Let's go to 267 first in the line. 267?
Hey, good evening, Elliot, Richard, and I want to say good evening to Brother West, man. It's a pleasure to hear you once again, my brother. How are you? This is Brother Ralph.
I'm fine, Brother Ralph, and thank you for that. I'm telling you, we get a chance to correspond from time to time, so, you know, it's good to know that our people are still strong, still kicking, and they're still out here teaching and doing the work. So, man, my hat's off to you, my brother.
Hey, my hat's off to you, Brother Wes. And, you know, I'm listening to the dialogue tonight, and you are absolutely correct. If we go back 50-some-odd years ago, Brother Malcolm X said that they were wings of the same filthy bird, regardless if we have black faces on that wing or not. We have to, like you said, reprogram our people to let them know that these politicians are not there as their ally and never have been. And I don't care if they're black or whatever they are. You know, and I'm just looking at the reaction of some of our folks, and I get depressed. First, they were elated like we won some kind of sovereignty when Biden and Harris got in there. Then they're crying and they're disappointed because of this so-called impeachment farce. All this stuff is actually nothing more than a setup, and I believe Brother West, that this is just the beginning. This, we haven't seen nothing yet. And see, that's what I'm looking at. You know, those people, some of them actors, some of them were there to make that thing happen. Because like you said, we got to see the man behind the curtain, who that wizard is. And that man behind the curtain is dictating everything. And the more we buy into BS and sit there looking at our television set every day, looking at this woman, Stacey Placid, or whatever her name is, and say, oh, she's dynamite. No, she's the enemy. And I used to hear this one guy always say, politics, all politics is local. Anytime you have our black elected officials telling us to go and trade in our firearms for some food stamps, I don't know if that's going on down there in Louisiana. But the black politicians up here in Philadelphia are telling the people, trade your firearms in for some damn food stamps so you can go to the supermarket, while the white politicians is telling them to buy up as much as you can. See, you are right, man. It's something coming down the pike, and it's coming quick. And Harris and Biden are putting there as a buffer to put our people back to sleep the same way Barack Obama had. You know, I just can't believe what is going on. They have a movie out. It's been out for a few years now, and there's sequences to it. It's called The Purge. You better pay attention to some of this stuff Hollywood is putting out there. I'm telling you, because there are certain scripts that are written for a reason. And in The Purge, these people come right to your door and pull you out of your house and kill you. So there are some things coming down the pipe. There is a Holocaust coming. I do believe that. I'm not going to be a willing participant. I'm going to go down fighting. You know what I mean? I'm just being honest with you. But I'm telling you what is happening. We need to start being serious about this. When I hear our so-called black-owned media, they're nothing more. All they do is repeat the same thing the white media tells us. You know, if the white media tells us to get vaccinated with some kind of trial drug, then you got our people on Facebook and everything else getting stabbed by these needles, getting something put in them. But there are reports all around the country right now and all around the globe. People are dying from them vaccines. So we're being scared and manipulated into being guinea pigs. And, you know, you're right, man. We got to be reprogrammed. And I'm saying from our grassroots groups who are most of the people, these grassroots groups, man, I've been in a few, and I got to keep saying it. The leaders are driven by ego, and they can't work with nobody, and the group falls every time. So I'm telling you, we need real grassroots groups. We need people who are committed that know that these damn politicians, politics is a joke. They're there to serve. They say it's a capitalist country. So what are they there for? To find out how they're going to spend money. And at the same time they spending money, they got their foot on me and you. And I'm going to leave y'all with this. Elliot, I know you remember. The mob, that mob we seen down at the Capitol, whatever you want to call that farce. Let me tell you something. I know for a fact if Elliot lived in Philadelphia, in South Philadelphia in the 60s, we had to fight those same kind of mobs going to school, and we had to fight them coming home from school or to go to the playground. We had to rumble them. So that's something that never went away. That's who they are. So, you know, I mean, but people act like this is something new. No, it's been there. The only thing that's new is you opened up your damn eyes. So, you know, I just had to call in, brother, and say, like, man, I was agreeing with you 100%. But, Elliot, I know you remember going to school or trying to get home from school. We had them same kind of folks with hockey sticks and bats and everything else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we were children and had to fight that junk getting to school and coming back home. So, you know, man, look, I just had to call and say, man, it's a pleasure hearing you on the radio. Yeah, we got to get serious about some stuff because the real stuff has not happened yet. That was just a trial run. It's coming. And anybody that think this thing is over, they must have thought those kind of mobs is over because they out there waiting and they're sharpening their knives. So. You know, that's all I had. I know you got other callers, but I just had to call in with my 5 cents tonight and let y'all know that stuff ain't going nowhere. Matter of fact, it's going to get worse before it gets better. So that's all I had, fellas. I'm going to continue listening. All right?
Thank you.
Appreciate you, my brother. I do want to say this. So those people that you said that they bought the line and looking for, you know, the good days are coming. If they are, let me know because I got a bridge I'd like to sell them.
I hear you, my brother. All right, y'all have a good evening, and I'll continue that.
All right. Talk to you. Let's go to 404.
Hey, Yehudu family. You hear me? Y'all hear me, Elliot?
How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm still learning. I'm fun trying to be alive, man. Elliot, I told y'all that devils do not lock up devils. So I know damn well they were going to let Trump off the hook, man. Like my brother said, by the way, brother, you got a good name, that West name. That's a good name right there, bro. My name is West. That's a good name right there. Wesley means smart, man. But look here. See, devils will not prosecute devils, okay? The number one, that Trump dude, man, they working together. Democrats, Republicans working together, man. I keep trying to tell these folks, man. And old Trump turned his boy Pence to the dogs, man. So that tell you right there that what he about, man. He turned his boy Pence into the woods, man. That was beautiful. So they self-destructing, man, in my eyes, man. Okay, Elliot, by the way, that sister's name, Mary and Carrie, man. They shot her in front of the White House. And the story behind her, that baby she had was Obama's baby. Okay, so see, not my brother. Now it's time to do the research, man. Damn them niggas on the top, man. Forget about it. We the ones that are on the bottom feeders right now that's woke and researching everything, man. I don't need now these Negroes on television to really, they really feed fake news, man. There's so much stuff going on behind the scenes. You got that smart brain in their hand, that pocket brain that nobody don't want to use. That's the phone, man. Okay? And, Elliot, when you have Mr. Dudley on, I like to ask him some questions, man. But anyhow, It's a fun time to be alive, man. But I'm going to cut my call short. But look here. My brother West, I'm going to tell you how stupid these Negroes are. They love everything white, man. Okay, yeah. I'm going to say something to pinch their toes. Them niggas still, what the worst white thing that killing folks now, is right now, that damn white snow. They so goddamn stupid, man. They want to stay up there in the snow instead of coming down south, bro. I'm in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So that they got their just ice. Y'all got y'all just ice out there. Look out the window. That's all y'all going to get. Keep loving the white folks. Get out the snow and come down south. Your mom and dad and them, they from Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia anyway. You better come on back home, man, so we can do this right. Anyway, that's food for thought for you and Richard and the rest of y'all. I want to be white. You want to jump in the white. Oh, white justice, man. Y'all got to jump ice. To be continued. I love y'all, man.
All right, later.
Stay strong, bro. Stay strong.
We got to go through, Brother West.
Stay strong.
Listen, we'll take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got several calls on the line, and we'll get right back to them after the break. Stay right there.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. Abibitumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. Abibitumi.store is here for you. Abibitumi, Black Power, Abibitumi. The only word you need to know to join your global KometsU Black family, to join your interconnected KometsU Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. Abibitumi.com, Abibitumi.tv, Abibitumi.tv.com, Abibitumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
And know that
that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. See, brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
We have a message to the black man, because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We are just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen, we're the singers and the dancers, and we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
We are the watchmen on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchmen for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend?
You can't do nothing for me. See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. But see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us.
Yeah.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 9:27 here in the city of Philadelphia.
And we're in the second portion of the Sunday edition of Time for an Awakening. Our guest in this second portion, talk show host, activist, and organizer, and the public television show, Our Story, is aired down in New Orleans. Brother Wes Johnson is with us in conversation, talking about the article that he wrote, America and the Black Holocaust. You can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Kenner, Louisiana. That's 504. Kenner, are you there? Are you there? Let's put them back on hold. Maybe they stepped away. Let's go to 773 in Chicago. 773.
Yes, sir. You got me?
I got you.
Oh, no, you're having a good show, brother.
I was expecting you to call now.
Yeah, okay. I was just listening to you on the phone tonight. So if you can put me back on hold, I'll finish listening at the show. You're having a good show tonight.
Well, wait a minute. You don't have nothing to say? Richard.
Well, I don't want to spoil your show.
You ain't spoiling it.
Yeah, you know, sometimes reality is a hurting thing.
Well, let me hear what you got to say. We got a guest on.
The process of understanding or perceiving a common evil has put many people into a situation of the utmost danger. That simply means the masses of human beings that were exterminated in the past, they never saw extermination coming. They saw bad, evil things being done to them, but they had no idea that the people doing these things to them had plans to exterminate them. But there's always going to be a few people that see it, like me, your guest, Geronimo, and some more people. There's always going to be somebody to see it. But the masses of human beings, they will never see the evil coming that they got coming down the pipe. That's the only other choice they have for us. They're never going to be fair. That card is not even in the deck. I would advise anybody, and I kind of did it before, so I'm going to remind people again, if you're able to get out of here, say some child, grandchild, life, so Zimmerman and them don't get their hands on them. If you're able to escape, I would think seriously about escaping. And if you don't want to escape, and you're going to stay here and fight Billy Bob in his wheelhouse and defeat him, then you do that. But some people might want to think about getting out. Don't let Zimmerman get your granddaughter, your son, them, because it's going to be, they can show you what they'll do. And look, the same people that blew up the buildings in New York, that same power structure, they was behind that terror event at the Capitol. But it went just like they wanted it to go. If they wanted them to kill everybody in there they went for, they would have been dead. So whatever they wanted to do, that's what they did at that time. And if they wanted to go a different way, it would have went a different way. Now we have to think about what the psychopath got coming next down the pike. What he got coming next down the pike for the slaves. He already showed us he's not going to recognize our humanity. That's why black people can never be terrorized. A psychopath going to church, they invite him in on Wednesday night. He assassinated 9 unarmed people. Nobody called it terror. Black president don't call it terror. Black attorney general don't call it terror. Why? Because black people cannot be terrorized. That's what you do to people when you're going to exterminate them. You dehumanize them. That's where we at, brother. You made me do it, man. Y'all made me do it. I didn't want to do it. Y'all made me. And I would advise people think people want to stay and fight these psychopaths in their wheelhouse. Do that. But people that ain't ready to fight and go in no war here. You might want to get out or try to get out.
It ain't nothing set for everybody. You're going to have to think about what's best for you. What you going to prove staying here if you can get out? What you going to prove? Okay, brother. Thank you for letting me vent. I was just listening to you on the phone. I didn't know you were going to put me on.
Thanks. Thanks for your call, brother.
All right, appreciate it. Straight ahead.
Brother Wes?
Oh, I'm just listening to the brother. I tell him, teach, brother, teach.
Wait a minute. Are you still there? Chicago?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Go ahead, Brother Wes.
No, I was just saying the brother, to teach, brother, teach. Brother is speaking the truth. And, I mean, it is so uplifting to hear brothers talk about the truth and spitting it and telling us exactly what we need to know. I appreciate you, my brother. Appreciate you.
Chicago, did you hear it?
Yes, sir. I'm still on.
Okay. Well, no. Did you hear the guest, what he said to you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I appreciate him, too. Well, I know, you know, listen to him. He know what time it is, and you all know what time it is, too. But sometimes, you know, certain things coming our way, we rather not even try to think about them or to try to realize what it really is. So I understand that, you know, having a problem like that with not a lot of people I talk to. But it's okay. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Thanks for your call.
But I would advise anybody, if they able to escape out of here, get out. Because we really, when it comes to combat, we don't have a chance. It just, that ain't even real. Plus, you got to think about, a lot of people ain't been in war. They don't know people running for their life. You got to have food for them, water, clothing. You got to have hospitalization for them, shelter. It ain't like people think, because they ain't been in it. You can't, you ain't going to be able to provide for all them people. It's going to be chaos. Mm. Okay, brother. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one. Let's go to 215. 215.
Good evening, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Brother Rich. I'm doing okay. Praise be to Allah, Brother Rich and Brother West. How you doing, Brother West?
I'm doing fine, my brother. And how are you this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, Brother West, Brother X, and I love Brother X. You still live, Brother Joe from Philly talking. Brother X is a tough act to follow, Brother West. What do you do for Encore? You know what I'm saying? How do you follow that, brother? I mean, I'm just keeping it real. Brother X just keep it real, man. You know what I mean? But, you know, I just want to say these couple of things. I won't take up too long. I'm going to save some time for my man, Brother Jay, because I'm sure he online and stuff. You know, Brother West, what you said about the police is right on point, because as a 59-year-old black man here in Philadelphia, a friend of mine, he's a fireman. He's been a fireman went to college together. He's been a Philadelphia fireman for the last, I guess, 20 years or so. And his fire station is right next to the police station. And he was telling me about a brother that's on the police department that's stationed at that station up there here in Philadelphia. And he was telling me, Brother West, he said this black cop who he's friends with, he said he had a white partner. Now, he had been out with his white partner on patrol, and his white partner is very aggressive, as most of them devils are with our people, overly aggressive, racist, brutal, whatever you want to call it. So he said that he said when they would stop a brother, this guy would be really aggressive. He said, and what got him, he said, when they would, and it's amazing, Brother West, how some of our people, they get their wake-up call always. He said when they stopped the white suspect and the white boy got out aggressive and the white boy even spit at the brother, so the brother smacked the you-know-what out the white boy. The white cop who had no problem putting his hands on black people, he told the brother right to his face, don't you do that. I'll handle this. And the brother said, no, man. He said, no. He said, this white boy spit on me. I'm not going to sit there and let him spit on me. And so him and his partner got into it. Don't you know, Brother West, this devil went right back to his sergeant because his brother spoke up for himself. He said he didn't want to be his partner no more because he was mad because of the fact that this black cop put his hands on his white suspect. You know what I mean? See, this is the kind of mindset you're dealing with. And Brother West, you can talk to people here in Philadelphia, and I'm sure it's probably like down in Louisiana and all over. Like I said, as a 59-year-old black man, I've heard so many stories. back in, especially in the late 60s, early 70s. You talk to the average black person that's in the 80s, late 70s, 80s, on upward from that point on, up in age, they'll tell you the worst nightmare you can have, Brother West, if you got pulled over by a black and white cop. Sometimes it's shocking. It might sell you as better off sometimes getting stopped by two white cops or two white cops coming to your house because that black cop, because that slave mentality, like you correctly told Brother Richard Elliot, that cop up at the Capitol, he knew better, like you told Elliot and Richard, not to shoot those white folks because he didn't know what the consequences could have been. Well, my point, Brother West, is this. If a black and white cop pulled you over, made a visit to your house, that black cop would show his ass. He would show his behind. He would be more nasty and more ignorant towards you than a white cop. Well, not that the white cop wasn't capable of it, because we know they are, but just to prove his loyalty to white supremacy, he would be overly disrespectful, nasty, whatever, to black people. So your point, Brother West, is well taken. Majority of these black cops in this country, they know their place. And in instances where a black cop will take action, you see what happened to them. Look what happened up in Minnesota, Brother West, a couple years ago, that black cop who's a Muslim and from Ethiopia, he shot that white woman. It was a tragedy. The white woman lost her life, but he was more justified because she came running out of a dark alley and didn't identify her. He didn't know who she was, and he fired. And what happened? He going to jail. He's serving 12 to 25 years in jail. So these black cops, like you say, Brother West, they know. They know what time it is in this country. They know what white supremacy is. That's why that black cop, like you said, was running up them damn steps and making him a hero, because he knew what his place was. Now you know, you make those people black that was chasing him, that nigga would have had no problem whirling around, pulling out his gun like a six-shooter. You would have probably had four or five dead black bodies on that step. You would have had no problem shooting them. But he knew better than to shoot at those white folks. And that's the bottom line, Brother West, you know?
Yes, you're right, my brother. You're 100% right. At some point, we're going to have the conversation as to why that is.
Mm-hmm.
And the why that is because we have a lot of black folk who belong to the lodge, and they are operating off of orders from the Grand Master. We got to have that conversation someday. Believe me.
I agree. And a couple of things I'll say, Brother West and Brother Elliot, and I'll get off. And correct me, Brother West, you or Brother Otis, who listened down in Virginia, correct me and stuff, because now with this Louis DeJoy, who's the Postmaster General, the one that Trump had appointed, the Postmaster General. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Brother West. Why is this man still a Postmaster General? I thought when Biden took over, he was going to get rid of this bum. You know what I mean? This man jammed us. He's the reason why this mail's so backed up now. Don't you know right now, Brother West, we still getting mail. People still getting packages from the so-called Christmas holiday that the white man celebrate. Now people still celebrate, some of us. You know, they still getting Christmas gifts. And because this man messed up the post office and Trump's orders, then those taking out mail machines, all this stuff. Why is Biden – see, this gives even more credence to what everybody said about the two, like Brother Ralph said, they're two wings of the same bird. Because I'm saying, so why wouldn't you get rid of this? Why is this guy still Postmaster General? And on top of that, Brother West, I'm hearing the news where he's talking about raising the rates for the postage and stuff. I'm saying, myself, what the hell, he's still doing Postmaster General? I thought Biden was going to come in and get rid of this guy, man. But he's still the Postmaster General. You know what I mean? And lastly, go ahead, Brother West. Go ahead. I'm still aiming to cut you. Go ahead.
No, I was just listening to you. You were exactly right. You answered your question. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, why he stole Postmaster General. And lastly, I was listening on terrestrial radio station, and this is something, Brother West, that me and Brother Elliot and Richard and the audience have discussed on other things. On a terrestrial radio station, Brother Jihad, who do the show on Time from the Wicked Network, Acres of Diamonds, he does an Islamic show called Islam Adair on the terrestrial black radio station. And he had on as a guest yesterday Sister Khadija Ali. And for those that might not be familiar, she's the second wife of our late great boxer and human rights activist Muhammad Ali. And she was a guest on his show yesterday, and I had the honor of talking to her yesterday. And so a brother, Nagy from the Nation of Islam, caught up, and he was, you know, clarify what had happened when they had Ali's funeral, or janazah, which is a Muslim funeral, back in 2016. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is authorized they was turned away from being able to attend. You know, Minister Farrakhan knew Muhammad Ali from the time he was in the nation. They was good friends, had a good relationship. But yet people like Bill Clinton was allowed in there. And I bring this, I say this, Brother Otis, because it all goes back to that conversation we have about our people with this slave mindset. Because I go back, Brother West, to Coretta Scott King when she passed away. And so Harry Belafonte, who was a benefactor and a good friend of Dr. King, helped provide for his family. Him and Dick Gregory wasn't allowed in the funeral, but people like Clinton, the Bushes, and all them was in there. And that's an insult. I mean, I get sick and tired of this stuff happening where our leaders and our famous black people pass away, make transition, and these white racist presidents who don't give a damn about our people, they're allowed to have front row seats at these funerals, but they don't give a damn about them people when they was living, and they damn sure don't give a damn about black people as a whole, but yet they sitting proudly up there like they care. And for George Bush and his son to be sitting up there at that funeral when George Bush, the first Bush, started that first war in Iraq on Dr. King's birthday back in 1991, January 15th, 1991, the first bomb started dropping in Baghdad. And for the head of this creep up there sitting in the front row, it's an insult. But yet Dick Gregory and Harry Belafonte wasn't allowed. And then I go back, Brother West, to when Aretha Franklin passed away 3 years ago. Minister Farrakhan sitting up on the dais. And Al Sharpton was so afraid to be seen with Farrakhan, he moved his seat away because he wanted to be seen. So he was sitting next to the minister. The next minute, he's sitting like six, seven seats away. And Bill Clinton had the audacity to sit up there and ask one of the ministers at the church service in Detroit for Aretha, what is Farrakhan doing here? And I'm saying to myself, what the hell are you doing here, devil? You ain't got no business here. You know what I mean? And you go back recently to Hank Aaron's inferno. Same thing. He there at front row seats and stuff and was so disrespectful. Like Brother Elliott said, he didn't have enough decency to respect Miss Ann. Instead of calling her Miss Ann, he called her Billy. Like they was friends or something like that, Billy Aaron. And so saying Miss Aaron, you know what I mean? And John Lewis, yeah. Criminal, he called out our late ancestor, Kwame Ture. You know what I mean? See, you know, we got to stop this slave mindset to have these white racist presidents at our people ancestors, at our people's homegrown service where they didn't do a damn thing but create policies and do all they could while they was in office to hurt and destroy our people. Yet when our people pass away, they show up at the funerals like they care about us. Man, we got to stop that, Brother West. And that's all I wanted to say, Brother West. And I thank you for listening and Elliot and Richard, you know, keep the good work and put me on hold, Brother Elliot. Now listen to the rest of the show.
All right.
Thank you, my brother. We certainly appreciated your contribution.
Brother West, let's go to one more. We got the 646 in New York.
All right.
Hey, what's happening, Brother West, man? It's always an honor to hear you. Listen, I'm just going to make this quick because, you know, I wanted to ask you about that movie, American Skin. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but I'm gonna leave that alone for maybe Friday next week or Sunday. But my question to you is this. Through all of the years that you've been on the planet and all that you have seen, how do we as African people move forward? And what must we do? From the mind of an elder like yourself?
Well, we're going to have to stop lying to ourselves. We're going to have to start seeking the truth about ourselves. You know, I mean, difficult for me because I was fortunate enough to have been raised in the culture. I was raised with a mentality from the Honorable Marcus Garvey. So I didn't have a disconnect, so to speak. So when you say, what can we do? We have to reach out to teach each other. And we have to be strong enough to show by example what strength and courage is all about. We have to be serious about where we say we want to go and what we say we want to do. Many times we get confused because we've only been shown one style of life.
And that's the European style. But at some point in every black child's life, an awakening comes when they realize that not only are they different from other ethnic groups, but they have a special air about them that they need to explore and investigate. We need to start priming and encouraging our youth to look towards that black side so they can know and understand who they really are and where they came from, which will answer the question why they are here. So I would encourage and urge all of us who are serious about doing something for us to lead by example and share the knowledge that we have about us with the rest of us.
So we would start with that the white man is the enemy, you would say?
I don't care where you start. You can start anywhere, but you end up with we are the chosen people. We were the original rulers. And we were and are the humanity that was given to us at the point and time of creation. We have to start cleaning up the lies, the miseducation, the mysteries that have been put out about us so we can find us. And we can allow our children to find out who we are and what we are.
Well, all I can say is thank you for your analysis, for your gift, and for all that you've done for our people, Brother West. Thank you very much. You put me on hold,
brother. Talk to you.
Thank you, brother. We appreciate you.
Brother Wes, we coming down to the close of the program. What's going on down there in New Orleans that you want to let our folks know up here?
The same hell they're catching there, we're catching here.
You know what? I seen it was a brother that sent me, that emailed me, brother out of New York that has a program, Black Men Screaming. He emailed me an article, if I can pull it up. Maybe you can shed some light on it before we close things out. Let me see if I can... boy, here it is. Wait a minute. Hold on one sec. Give me a second, Brother Wes. I can't seem to... oh, here it is. He says some state troopers down in New Orleans that was members of this F troop down there in Monroe.
Yeah.
That was, doing heinous acts against black people. I think it was four of them. Four of them that they identified, put it that way.
Yeah.
Can you shed a little light on that? Well, do you know anything about it?
They got busted. Got busted doing what state police throughout the state do to black folks. They just got caught. You know, we have a situation here in Louisiana where you have New Orleans at almost the bottom of the state. You have places like Alexandria, which is almost at the top of the state. And everything in between points to the fact that some of us are in 2021, and some of us are in 1721. And you have those mentalities that move around the state, and when they get in odd places at odd times, they begin to throw off who they are and what they're accustomed to, and it doesn't blend with the area, the geographical area that they possibly could be in. But the point of the matter is, Black people throughout the state and throughout this country are still slaves. We're still not permitted to live a life that we choose to live. And when we rebuke this, then we're pounced upon. So state police have a problem because they move them around from time to time from different areas of the state. And a lot of times they just haven't had a time to cover their act up. So they don't stick out like a sore thumb. But white supremacy is still white supremacy. And we're still having to deal with the backlash of white folks believing they have white privilege and treating themselves as if they still have Black folks serving them. We cannot forget it, and we have to put our thinking to know that we can stand up like men, but a lot of times we're going to have to pay the consequences for it. So what has happened there happens throughout the state. And some of us are aware, others of us are still asleep. And we better wake up before it's too late.
Yeah, I just wanted you to shed a little light on that, because some of our people are under the illusion that during the summer, during the height of this shutdown, when a lot of people was quarantined in their home, that a percentage of our people was excited when they seen white folks out in the street hollering George Floyd and running through cities and all that other type of stuff. But that was just a mirage. It was an illusion. They didn't care anything about George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, or any of our people that get abused and murdered by these police, because it has never stopped since that happened with them and before that. The thing that has stopped is seeing these white folks out in the street hollering and screaming with their fists in their hair, hollering George Floyd. So, you know, it's just a wake-up call for some of our people to really, like you said, realize what's going on.
Yes, it is, my brother. It certainly is. And with the program, your program, you're doing a fantastic job in bringing that awareness and a lot of times shocking them into reality.
Brother West, before you leave us, is our story still airing? Do you do the both the radio and the TV production of it, or what's going on?
I'm doing the TV production of it. Pardon me. The radio station I was with was sold some time back, and they've taken on a milder, so to speak, programming. So I'm no longer doing the radio on a consistent basis, but I'm still doing the television show on a consistent basis.
When was our story aired? What day did you used to do it? And you had somebody with you, didn't you?
Yeah, I used to come on Tuesdays, and that was on WBOK. The other guy was Chuck Perkins. So we delved into some areas that they were just a little squeamish to deal with.
Well, I'll give you a call because, you know, Time for Awakening is it can be utilized, and we'll get our story back on the air.
Okay. Look forward to it.
We'll talk.
Okay, sounds good.
Brother West, thanks for your contribution, and always onward in the struggle, that's all.
Thank you,
Brother West.
I appreciate both of you guys, and keep up the good work.
Talk to you
soon. Stay strong, stay black.
Peace.
Peace.
Richard, good hearing from Brother West. Wow, they pulled the plug on the program, put something else on. Well, at least we can, I'll step up and try to do something and get the program back on. And especially, Tuesdays, a Black Reality Think Tank comes on in the evenings. I don't know what time they was airing their program, but we can try to work something out.
Sounds good.
Richard, before we leave, it's an article that I want to, Brother Marcus sent me an article in the Sudan there, you know, because on the continent there, you got a lot of upheaval going on with some of the nations with new elections, some of the young people getting out in the street and things of that nature. Some of it's been leaking to this the press here in this country. But have you been seeing some of those articles?
Not the Sudan. Primarily now, I've been looking at Haiti. What's going on in Haiti.
Okay. But, I mean, it's similar things going on in the continent to what's going on in Haiti.
Right.
He sent me this article that, let me just read the first paragraph. In our series of letters from African journalists, a Sudanese writer, Sanab Shalil, looks at the clash over what children should be taught in schools in the post-revolution era. Now, new folks have taken over the government, and they wanted some of these textbooks pulled out from their children. Now, one of the things that they had huge problems with is the images in their textbooks. Now, one of them is, and it shows the picture here, Michelangelo's painting of the creation of Adam and supposedly God there with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the image that the Italian Angelo painted for the on that 16th chapel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it kind of reminds me of Dr. Amma Mazama and when she was on the program quite a few years ago now, she talked about black folks having sacred and what black folks consider sacred. I don't know whether and being that you know Dr. Mazama, you've heard her talk about that.
Right, right.
And the reason I'm saying that is because Europeans across the board consider the Vatican, the Sistine Chapel, and all, they consider those things sacred. They're sacred sites. That painting that Michelangelo made of supposed to be God and Adam is sacred to them. They put that propaganda in books in African countries, in books here. I mean, which kind of shows, and there's a different topic, which kind of shows that they look at all of us as the same. We're the ones, because of slavery and stuff they drilled into the minds of our people, we look at people on the continent, people in the islands, as some type of separate entities.
Right.
When they basically look at all of us the same. The reason I'm saying that is because if you look at this image, this sacred image that's painted on the Sistine Chapel of supposedly God and Aaron, Adam, number one, you notice they're two European men.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that you notice right off the bat that goes towards this thing that they're pushing now, and they don't really have to be pushing it because it's always been in the minds of Europeans, but things always come full circle. This idea of homosexuality and wanting it to be accepted and pushing it on the minds of our youth, it's already been in the minds of Europeans, period. But pushing it on the minds of our youth, mind you, Richard, they're not directing it towards you, me, some of the callers. They're directing it towards our children so they can learn to accept it and be part of it. But the thing that strikes me is, and this goes straight to the minds of Europeans, this image of God, for example, if you look at the images that our people drew of people that they reverenced as holy, you've seen some of the images on tomb walls. Right?
Right, right.
But if you look at this image of that Michelangelo painted that they put in their sacred space, the Sistine Chapel, Adam is butt naked. And God, supposedly the image of God, he got like a sheet over him.
Mm-hmm.
But he got his arm around and covered, and all around him is children naked.
Mm.
Now, what is the mindset? See, that's what I'm talking about. How is that anything sacred? How is that crap, that foolishness pushed into the minds of our people, both here and on the continent?
Mm-hmm.
Two men, images of two men, I don't care whether they say he's their God. He's naked. Adam's naked. And then he's hugging. He got his arm around and cuffed and surrounded by naked little children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, listen, that was European society. We already talked about that, how they viewed relationships primarily between two men. They valued that more than relationships between men and women. That's relatively new to Europeans. And when I say relatively new, I'm talking about maybe a few, 3,000-4,000 years.
Mm. Yeah.
Those relationships with men on men and men on boys was always valued in European society and in their mindset. I think when they became quote unquote civilized, they wanted to hide those aspects of themselves because it made them look more like a base type of human, but you know, things come full circle. This stuff is coming back out, but it's a sanitized version of what they always believed. Mm. But I just thought it was eye-opening for some folks to look at that image and just get their assessment of what they see there. And do they think that that's odd, strange, or what's their opinion of it? I'd like for somebody to put that on some of those websites where, or even some of the folks in their family that's real religious, and ask them their opinion on those images.
Mm.
Yeah, just something to make you think. Curious. Yeah,
something to think about.
Richard, before we go, the airing of the Africa Town address, State of Africa Town, will be aired on Time for an Awakening on Saturday afternoon. And it'll be Saturday morning in Seattle. I think it's 10 o'clock there, but in Eastern Standard Time, it'll be 1 o'clock on Time for an Awakening Media. I think it's supposed to be like 3 hours, the State of the Africa Town Address. They're going to have several speakers talking about what they've accomplished, their future plan. In fact, they got and I know you've seen it, Richard. You know how here they got this Philly 2035.
Right.
Where they got all types of plans that Europeans want to see for this city that don't include you. Right. Well, they got an Africa Town 2035.
The city or they have
created? No, they have created plans. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, that it's either 2030 or 2035.
Okay.
I know they have. So I'm quite sure all of those things are going to be discussed, showcased, things of that nature on the State of Africa Town address to show, you know, what these brothers and sisters have accomplished out there, what they plan to do, and they've been networking with other of our people in some of these other cities, talking about what they can do and what they can accomplish, similar to what Mr. Dudley was talking about earlier this evening.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, I'll be looking forward to listening to
him. Yeah, before we leave tonight, just want to go over the lineup on Time for Awakening Media, Time for Awakening Media, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. That's 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Always interesting conversation and dialogue on African Perspectives, and you can catch that Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on that evening, from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. And from 8 to 9 Monday evenings, Black Therapy Central with host Dr. Maria Combine. And from 9 to 10 on Mondays, first and third Monday, and then it'll be coming soon. I don't know what Brother Jamoke is doing, but I'll talk with him. Conversation Reparations. They'll be re-airing their program again. On Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Friday, Time for An Awakening is back from 8 until. Then on Saturday, Black Sister Talk with host Luanda Chambers from 4 to 6 Saturday afternoon. And Saturday evening from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa with host host Alfonso Watkins. And then Sunday, Time for An Awakening is back from 7 until. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the thing that they'll soon have to take. Oh. listen to save the children. To save the children.